After some harsh words for Fannie and Freddie, where does housing policy go from here?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The government's hearing on what to do about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac wrapped up yesterday. Today, the general consensus is goodbye, Fannie and Freddie. Hello, what exactly? Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports.
Barney Frank says Fannie and Freddie have to go. The chairman of the House Financial Services Panel, former champion of the government-backed system, now says the federal government should not be a, quote, backstop in the mortgage crisis. The only question, he says, is what to put in their place. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner sounded a similarly ambiguous note at yesterday's hearing, signaling the end of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the beginning of something.
These were avoidable failures. And it is our responsibility to make sure that we create a system that is not vulnerable to these same failures happening again.
At stake is the future of the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage that Americans have come to depend on. Without Fannie and Freddie as the big gorillas in the room, the government will still need a way to assure banks they'll get paid back for millions of mortgages. Otherwise, private banks won't make those loans. A world without Fannie might move the government from being on the first string to being on the bench in case a recession or banking crisis happened. Those loans would need to be covered by taxpayers only if things went bad in the housing market. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And now let's check the stock market. After a positive day on Wall Street, Asian stocks mostly rose today. China was the exception. There are signs of a slowing Chinese economy. And European stocks are off less than 0.5% now. Yesterday, there were decent earnings from Walmart and Home Depot and some improving economic signs. All that helped stocks rise more than 1% across the board. The Dow gained 103 points for a close of 10,405. The head of Google made a startling recommendation recently. He said people should be able to change their names to erase the embarrassment of their teenage online indiscretions. Well, many a college grad would probably make that move now that they're job hunting. But as Janet Babin reports, in a digital society, there are no do-overs.
It took me a while to write this story. First, I had to review my online persona. All clear. But if there were something compromising out there, who wouldn't want to erase the indiscretion of youth? Maybe Google CEO Eric Schmidt is right. We should all get new names when we get our first real job. Mark Rotenberg at the Electronic Privacy Information Center says that's an interesting position for Schmidt, since it's Google that stands to gain from our lost privacy.
His solution that people should have to change their names because his company is collecting and distributing too much personal information seems particularly unfair.
Schmidt's suggestion probably wouldn't work anyway. Software developer Matt Pizzamenti created an online tool to manage Facebook's privacy settings.
It's kind of a non-solution, right? I'm sure your new name would be just as easily linked to your old name, and your friends still know who you are.
And so do your enemies. In a digital society, we may not be able to forget, but Pizzamenti suggests we could forgive. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The woman whose sexual harassment allegations cost Hewlett-Packard CEO Mark Hurd his job is reportedly claiming her work with the company dried up because she rebuffed Hurd's advances. That's according to Associated Press. Hurd denies making any advances on Jody Fisher, who worked as a contractor for HP's marketing department.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
If you get a letter telling you you won the lottery, I hope that somewhere amid your rejoicing there is skepticism. Lottery scams are not new, but thanks to technology, they are getting craftier. Here with a recent example is Los Angeles Times business columnist David Lazarus. Hello, David.
Good morning.
So how does this fancy scam work?
Well, I looked at a case the other day where a woman in Southern California receives a letter from a lottery company saying, congratulations, you have just been pulled from a computer base and you are the lucky winner of a portion of $4 million. And there is a check included with the letter for $3,875. And here's one of the beautiful things. The check, for all intents and purposes, looks real. It's got routing numbers. It's the real deal, or so you think.
Okay, so you got a real-looking existing check. Where does the scam come?
The scam comes because the letter says this check for, in this case, nearly $4,000, is merely a down payment on the $125,000 that's coming your way. However, the letter explains that because of the insurance bond policy coverage, which is, of course, silly talk, but nobody knows that, you're going to have to send back via Western Union a little bit of money to cover some of the taxes. And this is getting a little bamboozling. The beauty of the scam, though, is they've sent you a check for $3,800 or so. They say you don't have to wire all that back. Just send back $2,800 and you'll still have about $1,000 in the bank. So clearly you're coming out ahead. Ah, the problem is because the check is a fake, but you will not know it after you deposit it. You're going to have to wait till it clears, or rather gets turned down by the bank that issued it. You're going to be sending money to the scammers from your own account. That's the scam.
So the old advice holds, don't send money.
The old advice holds, no free lunch. If you get a check in the mail that you are not expecting or that you do not know where it's coming from, walk away. Do not put it into your account. If you have questions, take it to your bank, ask them, and if you do deposit in your account, for God's sakes, do not wire money to anybody until you see whether the check clears.
LA Times business columnist David Lazarus, I'm going to remember that. Thank you.
Yes, do. Thanks.
And finally, Britain's National Tourism Agency says overseas visitors spend more than $25 billion a year there, and welcoming them is, quote, absolutely vital to our economy. With that in mind, the agency has released a new etiquette guide for the treatment of foreigners. Don't wink at someone from Hong Kong, says the guide, and don't ask a Brazilian personal questions or snap your fingers around a Belgian. People from India don't appreciate being touched, while a smiling Japanese person is not necessarily happy. And never call a Canadian an American. It insults them. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. Download our Midday Update podcast at marketplace.org and peep my tweets at Bill Radke Radio in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.